Yeah, we're going to get to it in a second, but I'm just going to get through some plugs really quickly. Going to talk about a TWA event coming up on October the 17th and 18th, a big weekend of Netrunner. On the 17th, we've got our charity event. You get to choose a charity that you want to champion for, that you want to play for. It can be any charity, this one that's important to you. That is the only restriction. You have to really be behind it. If you win this tournament, all the proceeds will be donated to the charity that you're playing for in your name. We'll also have promo cards for everybody as per usual. So it's a great cause. It's the cause you want to fight for, the cause you want to play for. It's going to be a great day in Netrunner. Very accessible. Also a competitive tournament, so we're looking forward to it. And on the 18th, we have a Winning Agenda team tournament. So come on down for the weekend. You're going to play in a team of three, and we've got an exciting restriction. You can only have one copy of any identity across all three of your team members' decks. So each player is bringing two decks, and no two decks can have the same identity. So you have to coordinate amongst yourselves over who is going to play what identity. You'll be paired up against other teams. You'll be able to talk through the matches. You'll be able to get pointers from your teammates. You can nominate a leader to sit in the middle and be able to give advice. It's going to be a great time. The team format's fantastic. Come down. Win yourself a copy of a Data Sucker and some other fantastic promos and exclusive playmats we've got available. It's going to be happening on the 17th and 18th of October in Melbourne at Good Games Melbourne on Lonsdale Street. It's a great excuse to come to Melbourne. You can come here and do all sorts of other stuff while you're here too. We'd love to see you there. Really looking forward to it, guys. Check out all the details are on Facebook. Enjoy this week's episode of TWA. Good evening, and welcome to episode 50 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey there.
2015 Regional Champion and 2015 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Hi, how's it going?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Hello.
2014 World's Competitor and 2015 Regionals Top 8 competitor, Hollis Echo.
Hello, hello.
And a person whose credentials are actually a spoiler for this episode, Calvin Wong.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the show, Calvin. And like most of our guests, you don't have to get up at an odd hour, I'm pretty sure, because you're just in Malaysia, correct?
Yeah, Kuala Lumpur. I was joking just before the show started that I'm actually the closest foreign guest you've had on the show.
If anyone from New Zealand would like to come on and beat that.
Yeah, yes, please. Yeah. Maybe get somebody from Tasmania, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's very funny. I appreciate that joke. Before we get into Calvin's super secret spoiler credentials, we're going to spend a bit of time talking to Hollis Echo, who's had a couple of weeks off. Hollis, how have you been?
I've been really good, man. Spent a lot of time doing things that are Netrunner, and I'm finally happy to get really back into it.
What are some of the things you have been doing that is related to Netrunner?
I have been testing a lot of really, really odd decks, getting ready for Dead and Destiny. Been playing around with Sunny and Adam. To be quite honest, I'm not really impressed with either of them, unfortunately. Also been, I guess, really playing with a new style of NBN deck, which I think we'll get to in a minute. I don't know.
We will.
Yeah, for
it'll
sure.
Be gas.
Last week when we spoke to V Herman, she mentioned the Southern Mega City Tournament, which was the... What branch of the ANRPC? Is that your regionals equivalent?
Yes.
Or is it the final qualifier?
Yeah, it would be primarily for anyone in the Southeast. Now, of course, if you don't live in the Southeast and you just happen to be in the area at the time there's a qualifier, you can participate.
Of the United States we're talking about, right?
Yes, yeah. In the U.S. And if you're there, you can actually participate in one of those local qualifiers. Making it into the you're top right. three of any of the Android Netrunner Pro Circuit events means that you get entered into the finals for that regional for the ANR Pro Circuit. So I participated in a qualifier in Georgia, I believe in Marietta, and I won that qualifier, and then, of course, I went to this, the finals, and did all right.
What's all right?
I got third.
By TWA standards.
You got third. I got third place, which...
That's very, very good.
Yeah, I was very surprised considering that the runner deck I played was a deck that I had a lot of experience with, but the Corp deck, that was the very first day that I had played that Corp deck. I had never played a game with that Corp deck until then.
That's great.
How many players were there on the deck?
Because it was only people that had won an invitational. I want to say the number was capped at 32. 32 players.
Would have been a tough field of 32, though.
Yes, it would have been basically the best in the Southeast in the U.S. So we had players like Pacer Stringfellow, who got second in Nationals, Ross Freetag, who won a regional here in the U.S. A lot of other great players like Ahmed Abessi, who's phenomenal, and he places in top eight in like everything he does. So it was a pretty rough field. I also had two of my friends here in Huntsville, Ricky and Frank, who are also ended up qualifying, and they were able to attend as well.
So in our episode where we recapped Australian Nationals, myself and Wilfie spoke about, and Jesse spoke about how we sort of changed our decks at the last minute. Is that something that you obviously did, seeing as you hadn't played with the deck that you...
Right. Yeah. Initially, what I was going to do is I was going to play RP, and that's because it was the deck that I had the most experience with. I had tried some NBN decks, like some Butcher Shop decks. I'd also played around with another Fast Advance that I believe Wilfie was kind enough to share with me online. I liked them both, but the problem was is I felt like I just did not have enough practice with them, which is interesting considering that the deck I ended up bringing I also had no experience with either, but it felt right, and so I went with it.
And what was the deck?
So it ended up being a NBN Fast Advance deck that utilizes Turtlebacks and Team Sponsorship. Turtleback says that whenever you create a server, gain one credit. And Team Sponsorship says whenever you score an agenda, you may install a card from HQ or Archives, ignoring the install cost. The plan, the initial deck that I saw of this actually was a Grail variant, and I didn't really like it that much. My local friend Ricky played it, and I was absolutely not impressed. And I think that was partially due to the fact that I'm not a fan of Grail in NEH. So playing this deck... it's pretty efficient.
Yeah, I've actually had a little bit of a chance to play around and play against this list, or variants of this style as well, with the team sponsorship in NBN.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollis, something I've been finding is that when they do start scoring out, it takes slightly longer to score out than your classic NEH aggro decks. But as they do start scoring out, because they can continue to layer this ice out further and further and develop their Sansan server at the same time, you just get absolutely snowballed over straight away. Like, it seems like the right place to go for this Neuroth Hub mid-range variant that is just going to snowball you out in one big hit. At least that's my interpretation of it. How do you feel about actually winning with it?
It feels a combination of awesome and a little cheesy, if I'm being totally honest with you. I definitely hit those points during the game where I would feel maybe a bit vulnerable in the beginning, but then as, you know, you res a team sponsorship or two and you score that first breaking news, all of the Sansans they've trashed now come back. And so now that only, you know, that's an additional issue. Now they have to come back, trash additional Sansans or trash CyberDex Virus Suite. And like you said, it just snowballs and that just keeps happening. It gets to a point where the runner just rationalizes it's best not to even trash anything, just hammer centrals. But by then, you know, your Sansans are definitely going to get res. You've got Astro tokens. You have a Biotic Labor. So, you know, and recurring CyberDex Virus Suite means that Clot is pretty much an instant purge. So it makes it very, very difficult to stay on top of it. You have to hit the ground running doing what you normally do versus NEH, like legwork, and then lock down R&D as best you can and hope that you can just maintain that lock.
And speaking of locking down R&D, you are going to sort of, as you get into the mid-game and you're just with any aggro NBN deck, you're trying to race the runner, there's a potential for them to try and steal points from your centrals before you get the chance to fast advance them out. You're going to need some pretty big ice to be able to do that, to protect your centrals. And I noticed that you're playing one of the most efficient ice in the game, Archer, that's also really taxing on centrals. How did you find that during the day?
So versus matchups where it's like Kate, for example, and that's pretty common because Kate is sort of the main, I think the primary like top tier runner deck played in the US. I'm not sure what it's like in Malaysia or in Australia. Might be the same. Archer really wasn't used as often as I would like. However, what it did do very well is it definitely caused a lot of hesitation from the runner. In some of my games that I had, for example, versus Criminal, a lot of the criminal decks that I was playing against only really carried Fairy. And their other Century Breaker was something like a Femme Fatale and then a Mimic. And especially in Criminal, when they don't have a super efficient Century Breaker in faction, other than Fairy, when you res that Archer, they're only going to get through a limited number of times. So, and I mean, after those times, every single access they need where the Archer's res is just so, so expensive. You combine that with cards like CyberDex Virus Suite, they really can't leverage the Data Sucker counters to be able to try to get past it in any sort of efficient way. And if they try to, purging at the right time when they're not expecting it really can just end the game right there from trashing the Breaker Suite. Versus Kate matchups, it really isn't amazing because they have Sharpshooter in faction. And while it does tax clone ships and Sharpshooter, Kate has the ability to do super digs with Maker's Eyes and RDIs in play. So it's easy to rationalize something like a Sharpshooter res or Sharpshooter install or from the hand or from the archives when they're looking at four cards. I mean, that's a pretty big benefit and not that bad. And then, of course, versus Anarch, it's probably one of the best ice, it and Little Engine.
I suppose one of the extra benefits there against Criminal is that they're much more likely to see the Archer in hand before you deploy it. The Shapers are just going to dig through with their SMCs and their Maker's Iron. It'll come up and they'll be a bit surprised, but, you know, exactly as you're saying, they're very well equipped to deal with something during a run with their self-modifying codes and with their clone chips. Yeah, and it sounds like the meta you were playing in was actually quite a lot like the old metas with criminals, with data suckers and fairies and maybe even the fair mate. Was that consistent?
I definitely saw, at least in my opponents, I ended up playing against a fair amount of Anarch and a fair amount of criminal decks, and that really worked out in my favor because I really didn't hit a Kate deck that was really well suited to do a super R&D dig until we got into the finals. And that's when actually I noticed where the weakness of that deck lies.
And how did you go? Did you find that having a whole lot of assets that are expensive to trash, you know, you've got team sponsorship, turtle backs, and then you've got your upgrade, Sand City Grid. How did you find that that worked in terms of taxing the runner's economy? Was that enough to overwhelm them? Or did you find that you got your turtle backs and your team sponsorships trashed a lot and that hurt your economy?
Sandstand, it was still the most trashed card of the day. A lot of people, when they first saw team sponsorship, they looked at it and didn't quite get it, I don't believe. They knew that it was good, but they couldn't, until you see how good a card actually is sometimes, you're not really sure how to evaluate the priority for trashing it. So yes, Sandstand is definitely an important card to trash, but then when they would hit a team sponsorship, they wouldn't actually know if it's worth trashing at that moment in time, especially if it would leave them with not enough credits to do things like SMC for clock, or allow them to be able to to play a breaker they need to get into a server that is now open.
I've been testing against my friend who has team sponsorship in Gagarin, and at first I was like, exactly like Hollis said, what does this card do? I don't really get it. And then he fires it like one time and I'm like, oh my god, that is so good. And now it has to die every time it gets on the table.
Yeah
either way, it's too many. And honestly, like the times I was playing a few games with our good friend Connor this week, and the times he fired it against me, I was just feeling absolutely abysmal. Like those very few games, that very raw feeling you get when you play against Next Design and they just start with these servers and you're just thinking, okay, well I'm certainly on the back foot here. I felt that like four times throughout those games because those breaking news is just pile up so quickly and it's impossible to grab back that initiative because he's saying, well, look, like it's going to cost 15 credits to trash my board. There's a Sand here. There's a pad campaign over there. That's just as good as any of my other cards. And you're gonna make that decision. Or you can try and race me. And frankly, none of the options are good.
I think we've spoken a lot about why Desperado and Data Sucker and cards that trigger on successful runs are good for runners because they reward you for doing what you want to do anyway. And I think team sponsorship is a good example of that on the corp side. It's rewarding you for scoring points. You don't need what it's giving you in order to score your points, but it just makes you more efficient over the course of the game. So I think in that sense, it has turned out to be quite a bit better than what I thought it was going
to
be.
I think it's very easy to miss, though, because that benefit is backloaded in the same way that something like Accelerated Beta Test would be backloaded. And I think Accelerated Beta Test is really the only comparable card we've seen before now, because something like Aggressive Negotiations, which also lets you do a very powerful effect once you've scored an agenda, the fact that it doesn't actually give you the clicks, and that's the relevant part here. It's the corpse clicks are so important because you're not just drawing cards or gaining credits or running an economy in that sense, but you're actually using it to install things very proactively. And that's especially when you're trying to race, every one of those clicks is worth so much.
And it's got so much more flexibility too, being able to be on the table beforehand and not having to do it in the same turn. Things like that's pretty good.
I felt while playing the deck, I felt like two of the largest advantages were, number one, when they get to that zone where they're actually effectively done running, it opens up a lot of unique windows where fast advance is actually not even necessary. There were a couple of games where, because they stopped running, because they realized I was pulling everything back, even if I was sitting at like 3 and 4 points, I would just install an agenda on the table because I knew they wouldn't go for it. And then at that point, you scored out, you avoid an SMC, and at that point it's just another breaking news until you win the game, or another 3-2 that you fast advance. Another thing that also got missed is if you pitch a single agenda from your hand, because you're going to draw every turn, you can actually effectively get combos out where you're scoring 4 points and the runner just has nothing they can do. Things like scoring an Astro, things like Biotic Labor, scoring an Astro, pulling that agenda back onto the Sand, moving one, advancing once and moving another counter from Astro means that you score another agenda. Those are all really sick things that actually did occur during the day.
Yeah, wow.
So apart from coming third in the tournament, how did this deck perform in the Swiss?
Yeah, I didn't drop a single game the entire day with that Imbian deck. There were some that were very close where my opponents got to 5, one where my opponent got to 6. I always hit that point where the clot did nothing, they couldn't find the last agenda, and I either had, you know, the winning agenda in my hand, or I was able to fast track it out for the win.
That's great, man. We're all really proud of you. It sounds like an excellent tournament, and excellent to hear that you did so well with a deck that you had so little practice with.
No, thanks. No, it was a lot of fun. Just draw test hands. That's the secret. Draw like 20 test hands before you start playing a deck. You don't even.
And what was the deck on your runner side?
I played a prepaid Voicepad Kate. It's pretty bread and butter. Everything you've always seen. I ran a Singleton Film Critic, a Singleton Escher. I ran Symmetrical Visage as opposed to Professional Contacts.
Escher is really gas. I really like Escher every time I play it, but it's so hard to fit into a deck, eh?
Oh, yeah. It definitely was the 45th card, for sure.
Mm. The 45th and a half, almost, right? Did you get to fire it off?
I did, only in one game, but in that one game it made all the difference. So, I mean, to me, that's why you include a card like Escher.
What on Haas?
Woo!
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
So, Calvin, we mentioned at the start of the episode that you're from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. What's the meta like over there?
The meta is brutal. Brutal. Like, the thing is that when I say brutal, you immediately assume that everyone is playing Tier 1 stuff. Right, and everyone is like doing everything they can just to stay on top of the StimHack lists and be all that. But actually, you have a lot of people who just play what they like. They just choose IDs that they're comfortable with. We had a pretty diverse field that showed up for the regionals. We had Tenons. I think we had two Tenons. We had two Cerebral Imagings. We had two Titans. We had Edward Kim. We had Valencia. We had Max. We had Ken. We had Kit, we had Professor, right? So that's what I'm saying, like, people will come and just play whatever they want, but they're good at.
And that obviously does make it hard to test sometimes, I imagine, if you don't always know what you're, there's no consistency in what you're playing against.
Yeah, like, because I think everyone was afraid of Marcus Batty, right, going into an underway regional. So a couple of players that I know had switched Vamp. They had loaded Vamp into their lists to deal with Marcus Batty. The thing is, nobody actually really brought any Marcus Batty, but the Vamps really hosed PE and Cerebral Imaging. I was one of two Cerebral Imaging players on the day, and the other guy got Vamped to zero. So, yeah, but it does make it a little bit harder to test. You kind of have to expect anything and everything, and that kind of pulls you in many different directions. But at the same time, I think you kind of have to go with what you know and go with what you're comfortable with. And just play what you want, play what you're good at. You have to tech against certain things that you expect. Like, I expected Faust. So that's why I didn't play Super Modernism, which is the corp deck that I've been playing for like a year. Faust eats Super Modernism alive, so I didn't play it. I brought Cerebral Imaging instead with Turing and Ichi, and yeah. So you have to make some calls, but generally speaking, I think people in our meta, they don't really like care what tier 1 is or tier 1.5 is. They just, is this deck good? Do I like it? Am I comfortable with it? All right, I'll play it.
That's great. That's a great way to approach any game, but especially Netrunner. I really enjoy that. Shilzy?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, I definitely think that's the right way to go about it. Like, tier 1 isn't just a few decks. Tier 1 can often, from the perspective of a single player, like a field that's threatening, is often going to be one that's incredibly diverse, that requires navigation with very touch and go elements all the time. Calvin, how do you navigate a field like that? Do you make concessions to, I know I love AI breakers, but a lot of people make concessions to including sharpshooters and Deus Exes, or in just using very linear strategies like astrobiotics. So how do you go about it?
On the runner side, what I did was I brought the deck that I've been working on for 14 months, which is a deck that's supposed to have all the answers. It's called Victorinox. I've written about it before, and I've talked about it before on the Terminal 7 podcast. It's Shaper with Logos. It used to be Kate, it is now Chaos Theory, because that plus one memory is crucial, because I run Magnum Opus. And so often, in the early to mid game, I would get mem locked with Kate, and I was like, no, this cannot do, this will not do. So I cut five cards, added three diesels, and went to Chaos Theory. And so the idea behind that deck is that it has a 1x answer for, like, lots of different things, right? Like, some of the 1xs I run 1x Escher, 1x Indexing, StimHack, Tinkering, Feedback Filter, Plascrete, Hyperdriver, Sneak Door Beta, and my personal favorite, Rachel Beckman.
Rachel Beckman.
That's, whoa. That's really good.
I was going to say, sorry, we're all just stunned to silence listening to this excellent deck tech because it's stuff that we've never played with before, really. One would argue because we're not brave enough, but...
Melbourne Originals a few years ago, there was a deck that sounded a lot like this that was about like Chaos Theory with all the answers. And I think they played a few more Stim Hacks and it was just scary. Because the way they could put together a rig at almost, you know, frightening pace, you know, within two clicks with their SMCs and their clone chips during the run, you would go from nothing to everything. Is that an element of your list? Or?
No.
Oh.
Although Personal Workshop is a 1X card that I want to test in the future, because speed is a problem in my list if I can't get Rachel into play early. Because the idea is, I also run 2 Tyson Observatory, so the idea is to get Logos on the table before the first score, Logos for Beckman, and then be a 5-click runner for the rest of the game. And that it is an intense amount of pressure, especially with Magnum Opus.
Do you ever find that breaking news is a problem with Rachel Beckman?
Oh, I never install it against NBN, obviously. But
he's not a moron, Jesse.
No, but so she is a dead card against NBN, and I did have one of my opponents in round 2. He was playing HB. He went to 0 to snare me just to kill Beckman.
That is much the beauty of one of though, isn't it?
Yeah,
having Logos at your disposal lets you tutor up exactly what you need for the matchup, and that's a very rare position to be in, but also a very powerful one.
Yeah, and if I have Hyperdriver and Beckman, I take 2 turns in a row. It's really scary, you know. with a five click turn, you kind of break a lot of the rules of Netrunner, because this is what you can do in a 5-click turn, right? You can Tyson Observatory for R&D interface, install that R&D interface, install the R&D interface that was in your hand, then Stim Hack R&D.
My mind is so blown right now. This is amazing.
This is great. So, Calvin, we said at the start that your credentials are a bit of a spoiler. So you've spoken about your decks, which we're all gagging for at the moment. So tell us about the regionals event that you played in.
Okay, yeah. So the Malaysian regionals, I guess the Kuala Lumpur regionals. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's the Malaysian one, because the Singaporeans had their own regionals. Anyway, so this was a 27-man tournament. Emphasis on man, unfortunately, because there were no girls.
That is a shame.
Yeah. My girlfriend wanted to go, which is part of the reason I chose Cerebral Imaging, because we only have one set of opening moves and Cerebral Imaging doesn't need Jackson Howard. So I decided to practice a deck without Jackson Howard just in case she could go, but she ended up having work commitments on the day. The last tournament she went to, she was the only girl as well, and it's kind of, the thing is that I think there's a little bit of pressure there when you're the only girl at something, you know?
Mm.
People probably bring it up a lot, I would say.
Yeah, that's
something that we spoke about with Abby for sure.
Yeah.
Being the only of anything is always going to be difficult, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Obviously, the feeling is very much exacerbated, in particular for women, because they just so often happens to be the case that they're the only one in the field. So,
yeah. I think she has that pressure that she has to fly that flag, you know, like she has to be the representative of like every nerd girl. But anyway, so the regionals.
The other thing that sucked is that you had to play Cerebral Imaging as well.
Oh, right. Like, to be fair, I really had fun with Cerebral Imaging. Okay, so I'll dovetail this with talking about the regionals. So the tournament, we actually had quite a lot of new players. One of the purposes that we had with the regionals was our local stores had been a bit frustrated with Netrunner turnouts. So the hardcore of us were like, okay, guys, we really have to focus. We have to get a lot of new faces for regionals so that we can like grow the scene, expand the scene, and it is not just be us, you know, the same 8 or 10 people over and over again, right? So we really put out the call. We really emphasized trying to bring new people in. So I think we saw quite a lot of new faces. Like in my first round, I faced a guy who I think just started. He brought his friend who had just started, and he brought his brother who had also just started. Yeah, so that was really great. So, but the thing about like having new players is that they're really unpredictable. You know, it's that old adage, like, what do experienced swordsmen hate fighting a newbie? Because you have no idea what the hell they're going to do.
Yeah,
you know. So anyway, I went up against this guy in the first round. He's playing NEH. He chose to co-op first, so I'm going up against his NEH, and the first thing you have to do is determine, is this Fastro or is this Butcher Shop? Right?
Yeah. So, well, that's for us anyway, but in your meta it might be a bit different.
Yeah, but those two, NEHs, are my weakest matchups as my runner. Both of them. So figuring out which one it is actually a priority for me so that I know if I need to tutor my plas grid. But anyway, so what do NEHs who are fast advanced not do? They don't often leave agendas, astroscripts especially, sitting on the table, right? So you don't check the remotes. So what happens? He scores one, unprotected. Oh. And I'm like, oh crap, now it's NEH on 4 points with an astro counter. I'm not ready for this.
Yeah,
you know, then I start to have to run ragged trying to outpace him, and it turns out, oh hey, he is killed. So ha, so yeah, so it was difficult for me because he kind of took a different turn. He didn't expect, I didn't expect him to try and sneak out a naked astro, but he did. I got him back the next round. He saw cerebral imaging. He saw I was trying to fast advance stuff. He discarded both plascretes, and I was like, oh okay, you're dead now. Bye. I'll double scorch you.
So you got him with your other win condition in your CI deck. That's pretty
exactly
cool.
Yeah. So the CI deck runs 2 scorched earths, 1 sea source. The idea is that you can kill them with 1 scorched earth in hand through a plas grid, because you can use efficiency committee, bartic labor, archive memories to play the same copy of scorched earth multiple times. Right. All you have to do is just get them to make a run at the wrong time, and then they die. I did not win a single CI game by points. All my CI wins, well, 2 of them, the only 2 wins I had that day, were through kill.
Yeah, I was just going to say, especially in that game you talked about where you played against Butcher Shop and you didn't know whether they were fast advance, seems like this comes up a lot. We hear about this a lot, where people kind of underestimate the strength of your opponent, not really knowing what plan you're going for, which makes it much better to have decks with flexible plans and plans where it's not immediately obvious by your identity or the first couple of turns how the game is going to go. Like, and it seems like that sort of thing happened with your opponent playing against your cerebral imaging deck, because from cerebral imaging we've seen they can either try and kill you, they can try and score 7 points in one turn, they can do a range of things, really, and it's by the time you can discern it, it might be too late.
Yeah, that was part of the reason I chose to go for cerebral imaging, which was that it had multiple routes to victory, which I really enjoy, which is why I like my Logos deck so much, because it's flexible and you can just sort of pull it in different directions depending on the situation.
Right, exactly. That's the same principle, really.
I had a conversation recently with Spags, and I mean, Calvin, something he mentioned that we talked about for a moment was that in the U.S., everyone is very net decky. You know, everybody goes online, they find, you know, the best deck that won XYZ tournaments, and they pick that up and they play it. And maybe that's even most locations, but what we did note is that it seems like a lot more different countries that aren't the U.S. Are willing to just play in these really, you know, these really interesting, different archetypes that, I mean, maybe not even archetypes, just different decks in general. And it has to be partially successful, because whenever you look at, like, the tournament winners for anyone in a different country compared to the U.S., it's always, like, something so interesting that you get on, like, a lot more often. It's always, like, somebody played CI, but it's not the accelerated diagnostic, you know, combo. It's just old-fashioned archive memories. Like, it's so interesting that you actually get to play in a meta where that's, like, that's the way things work. And you get exposure to a lot of different things. Because I have a feeling, especially when you go to, like, Worlds or any bigger tournament, those odd decks like that can actually make a big difference for whether you win or lose.
No problem. Because you come out of left field and people don't exactly know what to do. Like, the wins I picked up from CI were definitely from people not knowing how to play against CI. But to be fair, the losses I had as CI were from me not having enough experience as CI, right? Because you assume that, oh, I've got 15 cards in my hand, it doesn't matter. Oh, he just single accessed my 3-pointer. Ha ha ha. Because I didn't res an Eli. Yeah, it dumb things like that happen because you just not experienced with the pilot enough. I do understand what you're saying, Hollis, with regards to net decking. I don't think many of us really do that here. Like, we have people who are fiercely competitive, but I think this is sort of like almost, I don't want to say that it's pride, but there is this thing where, like, you tune it yourself. rather than... Because, okay, the dude who won the tournament, he won with prepaid kit and replicating perfection, right? But prepaid, he put a couple of interesting...
What a filthy netdecker.
Yeah, but he put a couple of pretty interesting spins on both that I really, really liked. Like, he runs Ashigaru, he runs Susanoo no Mikoto, and in his Kate deck, he has one Vamp. He has, instead of two Astrolabes, an Astrolabe and an Akamatsu. Professional Contacts, 3x. So it's his own spin on a very familiar archetype, but I feel like it gives him like just enough of like his own personal flavor that he's comfortable with it and he really likes it. And yeah. Also, Ashigaru is damn hard to deal with as Faust.
I think that's very much part of the distinction between, I guess, what we would call Tier 1 and Tier 2. A Tier 1 deck is one that you can pick up, and there are certain elements of it that can be changed for your metagame, but the core is fundamentally good. Whereas a Tier 2 deck, the core is fundamentally built for your metagame. And so all 45 of them, or 49 of them, might be tailored towards your metagame. Or at least that's how I understand it.
Yeah, it's possible, yeah.
Or even, I think you've touched on exactly what Wilfie was referring to earlier there as well, Calvin, in that even if you're playing a Tier 1 deck and you're playing it because it's consistent and it's powerful and it's proven, having some element of surprise and something different, both as Corp and Runner, can really lead to you getting that extra 1% and getting those extra wins. And yeah, there's so much value in surprise as both the Corp and the Runner in this game, that can't be underestimated.
Especially now with Da Vinci and Street Peddler offering, increased power to hidden information further than ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a really good place, yeah.
Does Logos reveal Calvin?
No, it does not.
Big game, big game.
We talk a lot about preparing for tournaments and preparing for big tournaments. So how do you go about that, being in the sort of interesting sort of brutal meta that you're in?
This was your first big tournament, wasn't it, Calvin?
It's my second tournament overall, and it's my first big one, yeah. Other than waking up early every day for 2 weeks to practice, I think the single biggest thing that I did was just not worry too much, right? Because you always get caught up in this cycle of like, oh, but what if there's Faust? Or, oh, but what if there's like a ton of kill, I'm not very strong against kill, or what if that's a ton of NEH? You can't do that, because I feel like you end up stuck in this cycle of like trying to play other people's games instead of playing your own game, and you feel very, it can be very trapped. You can feel very trapped. So I think part of it was not doing that. I was very worried about tilt. I thought that tilt might be an issue, but it turns out playing League of Legends for very many years gives you a lot of experience on how to deal with tilt. So I didn't have any problems on the actual day. I ended up coming out of 27, I came 14th, the very definition of dead middle. And while I was annoyed with myself at the, especially my runner losses I feel were preventable. I made really silly mistakes that I could have avoided. And if I had won all five games as my runner, I would have been in top eight for sure. But it happens, and you know, I think that's a big part of it, like having that mental preparation of, it'll happen. It'll, the way it is the way it is. And I think that's something people say a lot when they talk about going for their big tournament. They're like, no, just do it. You know, it's scary and it's intimidating, but you just do it and it'll be fine. And that's actually really true. You just do it and it'll be fine. Even if you didn't win or didn't do very well or didn't place very well, you can have some really, really fun, really, I dare say, epic moments. Like, there was one guy who came. He didn't have a playmat. So his playmat was just him taping five pieces of A4 paper together, right? And putting it on the table. And that was his playmat.
Wilfie, you should try that sometime. You never seem to have a playmat at tournaments.
That's true. I'll definitely keep that in mind.
No, but
we'll post a photo of Wolfie's playmat collection in the show notes.
No, but the best thing is, right? So they opened three kits for the prize, for the prizes for the regionals, because so many people came. So we had a lucky draw at the end, and one of the lucky draw prizes was a playmat. And guess who won it?
Wolfie Hurry.
No,
the dude with the bigger playmat.
Yeah, the dude with the paper playmat won the actual playmat, and he ripped it up on camera.
Oh, whoa.
He ripped up his paper one, right?
Yeah, he ripped up his paper one on camera. And he's like,
"Ah!"
Oh. And people in the crowd started shouting, "No, why did you do that? Sell it for secondhand value."
it's now a matter of history, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's great. How many kits did they have to give out?
They opened up three kits.
Three. That's so cool. That's a great way to support the community and make it a bigger event, make it something special. Well, did you enjoy your regionals experience?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm going to sign up for nationals for sure. I don't know how well I'll do because our top player Bernard is amazing. After the regionals, I met up with him and we brought our regionals decks and I lost like 8 games in a row. So
that's right. You only need to win the 9th, right?
It does not portend well for my nationals. But I don't know, I'm not going there to win. I'm just going there to have fun and have a nice day of playing Netrunner. It's very cliche. Everybody says that. Oh, you go to these big tournaments, but it's super friendly and you just have a nice day of playing Netrunner. But it's true. Like, you're so skeptical when you hear all these people talking about it and you're like, no, not for me. Like, I'm different. I'm not like that. It's true.
That's great.
That's great. And we'd love to have you on again after that tournament and hear about how you went. And also, we'd love to hear about any other fun, fantastic, what are to us jaw-dropping builds that you're taking to these tournaments, because they sound super great.
Yes, we'll definitely post about them in the show notes.
And I'm looking forward to doing a bit of testing with you online. That'd be fun.
Oh yeah, that would be great, yeah.
Thanks so much for listening this week, guys. If you want to get in contact with us, you can shoot us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter @winningagenda, or you can check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. Thank you so much to Calvin for coming on all the way from Kuala Lumpur. Thanks for coming on, Calvin. Really appreciate it. Have you had a fun time?
Thanks for having me on. I'm pretty sure I'm the lowest ranked guest ever on The Winning Agenda. 14th place.
And that is your real number one achievement.
But it was an absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.
No problem. We'll definitely have you on again soon, dude. Appreciate it. Good night, guys. We'll be back every Monday as normal. Tune in next week when we've got our super exciting and 1 year anniversary extravaganza. We're all excited for it. We hope you are too. See you guys soon.
Don't sound too excited, Brian. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be off its chain.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. And thanks, Calvin.
Okay. Cheers. Bye-bye. Any last questions for Calvin before we wrap up?
Calvin.
Yes.
What kind of electro do you like?
What kind of electro do I like?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Honestly, like, I don't know enough. Oh, Imogen Heap. She's my favorite electronic artist.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, she's my favorite artist of all time, period.
Of all time?
Yeah.
But it's very new school, isn't it?
Imogen
Heap? I seriously thought you guys were talking about League of Legends for like 30 seconds there. I'm like, this must be a League of Legends thing.
I'm just trying to find a way to talk about my love of Daft Punk and funk in general.
Yeah, cool. All right.